Yes, so good morning. I'm going to share three things with you this morning, which for me give me a way into approaching the mystery, the magic, the wonder, and the vastness of bodhicitta. If you like, you could think of them as doorways. However, I will be using words inevitably, but to point beyond words to the pure wordless essence. So this short talk is structured around a poem, a sentence, and a story. And I was really excited yesterday in Sibadimati's talk. Well, I was excited by a lot of things, but I think the three areas that I'm going to touch on actually map onto the three aspects of faith which she brought to our attention. I haven't been able to think that through really fully, but I just really sort of got excited that that might be the case. I think it is the case. Anyway, yes, so first of all, the poem. The unseen flower. Compassion is far more than emotion. It is something that springs up in the emptiness, which is when you yourself are not there, so that you do not know anything about it. Nobody, in fact, knows anything about it. If they knew it, it would not be compassion. But they can only smell the scent of the unseen flower that blooms in the heart of the void. Compassion is far more than emotion. It is something that springs up in the emptiness, which is when you yourself are not there, so that you do not know anything about it. Nobody, in fact, knows anything about it. If they knew it, it would not be compassion. But they can only smell the scent of the unseen flower that blooms in the heart of the void. So this poem by Bhante sums up the bodhicitta for me. It contains the mystery, the selflessness, and the fact that it is an experience. And there have been things in my own experience which resonate or chime with the what I feel is expressed in that poem. And for me, more and more, the bodhicitta is about becoming more and more unselfish. I aim to become deeply imbued with the attitude that there is no difference between myself and another. And that this is an experience in relation. It's not a metaphysical position or an abstract ideal. Years ago, when I first came along to the FWBO, as it was, it was quite a lot of talk about bodhicitta, and I just found it very, very abstract. In fact, I wasn't even sure how attractive I found it as an idea or as an ideal. But over the years, it's become a deeply inspiring and motivating force in my life. In fact, I think I go so far as to say, this is what I'm here on this earth to do, is to create the conditions for the bodhicitta to manifest. And this, I think, is what the order is all about. It's giving us a context to create the conditions for bodhicitta to flow. In recent years, Subhuti's drawn attention to Sanghakaya, as Subhadramati mentioned yesterday. And you're probably all familiar with the Gaurava Sutta, in which the Buddha asks, shortly after his enlightenment, what can an enlightened being revere and rely upon? And there are actually two versions of this sutta. And the one in the Anguttara Nikaya says, the Buddha says, not only does he revere, well, revering and relying on the Dharma, but he also makes this extraordinary statement. Once the Sangha has come to greatness, I lived revering the Sangha. Once the Sangha has come to greatness, I lived revering the Sangha. This is a deeply profound statement. And Subhuti suggests that the Buddha is talking about Sangha as an experience of the Dharmakaya embodied, an experience of bodhicitta in the world. And this is what I see as the whole purpose of our Sangha, our order, is to bring into being this experience of the beyond, to create a transcendent community. And I believe deeply that this is possible. I'm sure, like many of you, you've had experiences where the bodhicitta is flowing. Sangha is moving towards greatness. I've found this particularly in working in teams of order members. I experienced it here at Adistana. But I just wanted to give you one specific example of where I think there was this movement beyond self, movement to create spiritual community, to allow the bodhicitta to manifest. The Dharmacharinis in Sheffield have been on an interesting journey regarding chapters in the course of the last 18 months, probably. And a year ago, we met to discuss possibly evolving our chapters. We were trying to do it, and it wasn't going very well. In fact, it was we'd reached a sort of full stop. And what came out of this meeting, that there was one chapter that was very, very effective and was working very well, and there was another chapter that was not working very effectively. And the conclusion of this meeting was that we all felt we had to find a solution to this, situation collectively. So people were willing to put aside their own personal preferences, likes, to arrive at a solution that was creative and effective for everybody. And it was a very, very moving thing to be part of. And I would think, sort of a year on, we've probably arrived at quite a good place, but there's been another bit to that. But anyway. So where order members gather, communicating and working to serve the three jewels, then something else happens. When that selfing, reactive, tight, constricting state is weakened, and it's instead there's an expansive, creative, free-flowing, open state, and this is happening amongst several of us, then I think something else can arise. We can smell the unseen flower. So that's my poem. My sentence is, the performance of the Sevenfold Puja is an emotional and spiritual preparation for the arising of the bodhicitta. I've been intrigued by this statement for a very long time, and have a very strong connection with puja, and have done from early on in my involvement. My early experiences of puja were transporting and very put me in expansive states of mind. So I have a lot of faith in the potential of puja. So I believe it's a place where we can glimpse the bodhicitta, that coming together in harmony with all our wills in the service of what is higher and deeply meaningful to us. I was very fortunate to be on the 3-month ordination retreat this year, and we had, wonderful pujas daily. lots of very wonderful poojahs. But there's one particular poojah that I'm just going to tell you about because I think there was something really very special about it for me. And we were doing an offerings puja from the Bodhicharya Avatara, and people collectively made offerings from some of the offerings in the Bodhicharya Avatara. So things like words, song, hymns of praise, lights, wish-granting trees, gardens of delight, precious parasols, and so on. So these offerings were made collectively and then they were offered in the puja. And the there was a very extremely wholehearted engagement with this particular puja, and it was arising out of conditions of harmony, trust and strong practice. And I think something genuinely transformational and wonderful was present in the room that evening, which was greater than the sum of the parts. There was a real collaboration and lack of selfishness amongst us. And that came out of us all sharing what was best in us. So one of the offerings of light called on the technical skills of one person and the creative artistic skills of another. Another offering brought somebody's writing skills together, combined with someone else's musical skills. The wish-granting tree was truly magical. Each member of our community's personal wish was transformed into something universal. And the precious parasol drew on people's creativity and dramatic abilities. So there was this kind of just bringing together of all everybody's different talents, gifts, aspirations. We were going beyond the narrow, limited scope of ourself to something so much greater. And I think that's what performing puja together creates the conditions for that to happen. It creates the conditions for us to move into something that is much more universal, much more beyond us. So that was my sentence. And finally, I'm going to tell you a story. So I was recently in Canada, and I found this story among the First Nations, Canadian First Nations. And it's the tale of the hummingbird. So one day, the forest caught fire. And the fire was raging through the trees. There was this terrible fire which was just gathering momentum and raging. So all the animals fled and were waiting outside the forest, wondering what would happen next. They were transfixed, powerless, worrying. Would they catch fire? Would they die? Would they lose the forest? Would they lose their source of food, their homes, and so on? They were just transfixed with anxiety and fear. But the tiny hummingbird flew to a nearby pond and took a drop of water out of the pond, flew back to the fire, dropped its drop of water, flew back to the pond, picked up another drop, flew back to the fire. So the hummingbird was tirelessly going back and forth to this pond to gather water to try and put out the fire. Meanwhile, the other animals eventually noticed the hummingbird and they asked, "What are you doing? Are you crazy? You're too small. That's useless. You won't make any difference to the fire." The hummingbird replied, "I'm doing what I can. I'm doing what I can." So we are all just doing what we can. The bodhicitta and the bodhisattva ideal can sometimes feel an overwhelming or far away goal, aspiration. But actually, you know, we're all doing what we can. We're all working to become kinder, less selfish, become wiser, create and develop a transcendent community where the bodhicitta can flow. And I think we just don't, it's very hard to know what effect we're having. I was circumambulating Dado Rinpoche's stupa at Tiruvannamalai earlier this week. And it's just amazing. I find it amazing, astonishing, that here I am in a Welsh valley, circumambulating the stupa of a Tibetan monk who lived in a small town in the Himalayas. Yes, you know, how did that happen? So we do have an effect that I think that we can't measure. The ripples ripple outwards in ways that we can't foresee. So it's we all just need to do what we can, and I think feel confident with that. The bodhisattva activity is a collective task, and we each have our own part to play. No one human being can do it on their own. And I just finish with I'm not going to read it all, actually. Banti's poem, The Guardian Wall, which you may not know. I suggest you look it up. But I'll just read four lines from it. So it's about bodhisattvas building a wall for human beings, a protective wall. And there are two lines that really strike me. But the loveliest bodhisattvas are the anonymous. And the final two lines are, grant that in thy great guardian wall, my life may be one stone.